eminence, if anything's on that planet, we'll know. As they walked in silence back toward the bridge, Kaylee felt Derek's mood darken.
What is it? She asked gently.
Is it wrong that I hope we find something? He asked. She knew he didn't expect an answer, so instead she gripped his hand. Things are fucked up when I'd rather the Dracarans had used a bioweapon on Arendal than find out our own people firebombed the planet. He ran his free hand over his head. She couldn't argue with him.
Engage the stealth shield, Derek ordered. System engaged. Green lights across the board, Drew said.
An alarm sounded over the comm system, sharp and urgent.
It's the automated warning from the satellite markers, Sean said.
A message followed the alarm, the disembodied voice repeating its critical warning.
This area is under a level 1 quarantine. All ships prohibited.
Kaylee watched the distant planet grow closer by the minute, her breath catching in her throat.
There's a lot of activity in this system for a planet under quarantine, Drew said. Can we identify any of those ships? Derek asked.
After a few silent moments of working at his station, Drew shook his head.
It's not just ships. There's an orbital station. What the hell is going on?
Derek paced between workstations. Cat, take her into geocentric orbit and keep us out of the way.
Drew, see if you can figure out who these ships belong to, and Sean, monitor any communications you can pick up.
A chorus of yes, sirs, followed, and the small bridge crew got to work. Derek caught Kaylee's eye, his expression stony. Tense silence filled the space until Cat announced they'd achieved orbit.
Let's start looking around, Derek said, tapping the comm. Reese, deploy the drones and begin mapping the surface.
On it, sir,
Reese replied. Send all the data directly to the bridge, Derek added.
Time crawled by. Kaylee wandered the deck, trying to stay out of the way. Tension hit her in waves. Outwardly, everyone did their job and held their emotions in check, but she felt their inner angst. Something corrupt was happening here, and now they all knew it for sure. One of the monitors on a workstation chirped, and Kaylee rushed over.
Preliminary readings. She squinted at the screen as the data scrolled. This probe is in the lower troposphere over the southern continent. It's not picking up any chemical or biological hazards.
Derek rubbed the back of his neck.
Let's make sure we have readings from multiple sources and various locations on the planet. Kaylee, compile everything into a secure file. We'll add the map images when they come through, and then we'll have to authenticate our coordinates.
Glad to have something to do, Kaylee sorted and saved. Absorbed in the work, she startled when Drew's voice interrupted the silence.
There's a ship leaving the system, he said. Can you identify it? Derek asked.
It's a cargo transport. She belongs to Trident Enterprises.
Kaylee watched the emotions play over Derek's face.
Trident is one of the Alliance's largest private defense contractors. Do you know who the founder of Trident is?
Sean asked, his eyes wide.
Derek shook his head. Yanis Athanas, son of the Alliance's new minister, Vasily Athanas.
Oh, shit, Derek said. I knew I recognized the name, but I couldn't place it, continued Sean, his eyebrows furrowed.
Trident supplies the Alliance, but they also sell to the highest bidder in other regional conflicts. Before Alista, I was in deep on Kyrs during their revolution. Trident, using subcontractors to keep their name clean, sold to both sides.
What are they doing here? Derek wondered aloud.
The ship launched from the surface. I can track it back and get a location, Drew said.
Do it, Derek ordered.
Once we have coordinates, send the drone down to take pictures. Sean, dig into Minister Athanas and his son. We need to know as much as we can about them.
Her stomach churning with dread, Kaylee returned to work.
Several hours later, two things became clear. There was no biological or chemical contamination on Arendal, and Trident had built a huge, presumably secret, manufacturing facility on the planet.
We have to get this information to the Security Council, Derek said.
Not the Security Council, Sean interrupted, looking up from his screen, expression tight.
This is the current roster of Security Council members, and Vasily Athanas is listed as co-chair.
Damn it, Derek said, pacing again.
We really have no idea how deep this thing goes, and we have to find out before we try to release the information.
This group was powerful enough to cover up a war crime and overthrow the sitting minister. They're certainly powerful enough to take us out if they know we're a threat.
Derek, Chapter 31. They needed a plan, and quickly. Derek ordered Kat to move Equinox out of Arendal's airspace. He then turned the bridge over to their relief crew with instructions to interrupt him if anything out of the ordinary, no matter how seemingly innocuous, happened on their watch. His team sat assembled around a conference table, brainstorming ideas. Derek felt backed against a wall, but the familiarity of having this team around him, working through strategy like they were prepping for any other mission, offered him a modicum of comfort. "Minister Bonaire has supporters, both in the General Assembly and in the military. If we can get this information to her, she could compel an investigation, even if she is out of office," Kat said. Derek shook his head. "I agree that she could, but if we go to her now with incomplete intel, we'll put her life in danger. We have to identify the network of corruption first so we can work around them." "And we have to do it without tipping our hand," Drew added, tapping his fingers on the table. "It's usually about money or power. If we can figure out who in the government has vested interest in Trident and its subsidiaries, we'll know who might be compromised," Sean said. "How do we get close enough to Trident to access those kinds of records?" Derek asked. "Buy something from them?" Sean suggested. Derek stared at him, an idea forming. "I have bought from them. Not me personally, but Almagest through the Alliance, for the new fleet." "The fleet that was just decimated," Drew said. "And needs to be rebuilt," Kat added. "But with the unrest in the Alliance, Almagest might now be looking to deal directly with Trident, negotiate their own terms," Derek finished, sitting back in his chair. "It's plausible," Sean agreed. "If we hint that Almagest doesn't want to play by all the rules, I bet the higher-ups at Trident would at least take a meeting to see if a new kind of relationship is worthwhile." Pondering for a moment, he added, "Trident's headquartered on Kythera. It's a non-Alliance world. Safe. Secure. But outside Alliance regulatory control and oversight." "Shrewd," Derek said. "Yeah." "Money or power?" Derek repeated Sean's words from earlier. He opened the comm and ordered the bridge crew to set a course for Kythera. When he looked over at Kaylee, who sat quietly next to him, she tilted her head. "Even if you can set up a meeting, how are you going to steal files from a defense contractor? They probably invented the security technology." Derek sighed. "Not easily, but I'll get Reese thinking about it." From her corner seat, Kat tried, and failed, to stifle a yawn. Fatigue slowed Derek's own thinking. They all needed sleep. He stood. "This is a good start. Get some rest. I need everyone sharp in 8 hours. He and Kaylee stumbled into the bed in his quarters. His mind raced, even as his body shut down. "I just want this to be over," she whispered. He pulled her against him, burying his head in the back of her neck. "Me too." She rolled over. "I'm scared, Derek. Somehow this mission feels different." Her breath misted his cheek, and when he brushed his mouth along her chin, he tasted salty tears. "You didn't have to come, Kaylee. I'm sorry." She cut him off with a firm, "No." Her head shook, splaying her hair against his chest. "I need to see this through as much as you do, and I need to be here with you. I feel like I have to steal every moment I can." Tracing her fingers along his arm, she settled her head on his shoulder. "When Drew and I left for the Dakaran base on Mira, he told me that every time Kat left, he wondered if it would be the last time he saw her. I feel that way now. I know bad things can happen. My parents left for work one day and never came back, but this is different." "I'm sorry," he said again, and again she stopped him. "Stop apologizing. You have to do this. We have to do this. There's no other choice. You and I are the same that way. We can't walk away." Leaning up on her forearm, she stared him in the eyes. "I wanted a life with you, Derek. I wanted it more than I've ever wanted anything. I thought we were going to have it, and now..." "Here we are again," he said. "Here we are again," she repeated softly. He didn't have words powerful enough to tell her how much he wanted that life too. So he told her with his body. "Captain Markham," Yanis Athanas offered his hand in a controlled smile. "Please call me Derek. I'm not here as an Alliance officer." They shook, and Athanas pointed to a chair opposite his desk. Derek sat, surveying the well-appointed office and the arms dealer who inhabited it. Tall and thin, with thick, dark hair that reached his collar, Athanas exuded confidence. While a smile may have curled at the corner of his lips, his eyes were cold, calculating, and didn't miss much, Derek was certain. He'd need to watch himself. "Drink," Athanas poured himself a glass of amber liquid, and filled another for Derek.
"Thank you," Derek sipped, and the smooth liquor warmed his throat. "I must admit, I was quite curious when I received your request to meet," Athanas said.
He opened a hand as if he could coax Derek's answer with only a gesture. Holding the other man's gaze, Derek kept his expression blank and took a longer swallow. After several heartbeats, he finally spoke.
"You may have heard, Almagest lost most of her newly constructed fleet."
Athanas inclined his head.
"The planet's leadership wants to rebuild quickly," Derek said.
"Isn't that why you're there, Captain? I believe the Alliance contracted with Trident Enterprises on behalf of Almagest. That contract is still in place."
"With all the unrest inside the Alliance and their hardware mostly decimated, Almagest feels vulnerable."
Athanas raised his eyebrows.
"And just like that, they're willing to nullify their relationship with the Alliance?"
he asked skeptically.
"Not at all. They simply don't want to be dependent on the Alliance exclusively.
So they sent you."
"And they'll deny it."
Derek took another drink. Athanas gave Derek a measured look. When he spoke, his words were a challenge.
"You've been an Alliance soldier for almost 15 years. Your service record is impeccable. You'd have me believe you're suddenly willing to cut a side deal on behalf of a planet that's only been on the grid for a couple of years."
Derek sat back and crossed his ankle over his knee, cradling the glass between his hands.
"My service record is mostly redacted. I've spent almost all my career in intelligence, working black ops and doing things the Alliance could never admit to. For the greater good, of course."
"Of course," Athanas said, his grin a thin line.
His attitude had visibly shifted from doubt to self-serving interest, but Derek knew he had to take things a step further. 5 years ago, the Alliance, with weapons and tech supplied by Trident, backed the Kearse government. At the same time, a small company called Janus Industries backed the Kearsian insurgents. Derek silently thanked Sean for that piece of valuable intel.
Athanas quirked an eyebrow. "I'm impressed. How did you figure it out?"
"It's my job to figure shit out," Derek answered.
Truth be told, he had no idea how Sean knew Janus was a secret subsidiary of Trident, and he hadn't asked.
"Arming the insurgents prolonged the war on Kearse by at least 18 months. Almagest is still unstable. The warring factions are barely at peace," Derek added,
letting the implication hover between them.
"War can be profitable," Athanas conceded.
"Indeed, it can be."
"So that's really why you're here," the other man said,
an eyebrow raised in amused interest. Nodding, Derek raised one corner of his mouth in a smile.
"Almagest makes a side deal, and I make an even better side deal."
"And how much are you expecting out of this?" Athanas asked.
"A small percentage of total negotiated sales. I'm hoping we'll both find the arrangement worthwhile in the long run."
Derek tossed back the rest of his drink and waited. Leaning back, Athanas watched Derek with a glint in his eye.
"I suspect it will be."
Derek leaned forward and placed his empty glass on the desk. With his other hand, he stuck a micro-drone to the underside. He smiled at Athanas.
"I hear you're working on a new Raptor design."
"Once a pilot, always a pilot," Athanas replied, chuckling indulgently. "We're already working on the final test flight simulations. Interested in having a look?"
"Definitely."
He followed Athanas out of the room.
"I think he bought it," Derek said.
"Oh, yeah, he did. He's already setting up an account for you," Reese told him.
"Nice job planting the tracker. I matched our signal to other outgoing noise, so it shouldn't call attention to itself."
He threw a nervous glance over his shoulder as Derek hovered over his workstation.
"Sorry," Derek said, backing off. "I should have access to their files in a few hours. I won't need to waste time on decryption when I can watch Athanas access his data from here," Reese said, smiling.
"You, my friend, are a genius," Derek said, clapping the other man on the back.
Chapter 32. "Sir, we have a problem," Reese said over the comm. Derek sighed. "I'll be right down," he said, waving at Sean to join him. Reese had been sorting data and running algorithms on the stolen files for the past 2 days while Equinox hovered on the edge of the Catheran system, monitoring ship patterns and unencrypted communications, with her stealth mode fully engaged. "What's up, Reese?" Derek asked when he arrived, mildly alarmed at the dark circles rimming the young officer's eyes. "I can't find anything improper in these files," Reese replied, rubbing at his eyes with a knuckle. "All the payments, contracts, and affiliations on record are legit. When I search for any of the keywords Commander Asser suggested, including Janus Industries, or even the new account Athanas set up for you, the same gibberish-looking code appears." "What the hell does that mean?" Derek asked, more bite in his tone than he intended. Reese cleared his throat. "I'm not sure. When I search for any of the other illicit accounts we know about, this comes up." He pointed at a series of numbers as they flashed across the screen, then ran a frustrated hand through his short hair and looked nervously at Derek. "The files exist," Derek said, tapping the number set on Reese's screen. "I agree, but where are they and why can't I access them?" "Clearly, they have one set of records for their legitimate business deals and another for the stuff they don't want anyone to know about," Sean said. "They have to track the dirty funds somewhere, though," Derek said. "With an entire hidden manufacturing plant off the grid and off their legitimate books, they have to be hiding huge amounts of wealth and transactional data. Someone keeps track of that." "No doubt," Sean agreed. "But who and where?" Reese wondered aloud. Drumming his fingers on the table, Derek stared at the number set that appeared in place of the Janus Industries file. "Reese, does the same number sequence pop up when you search for any of the missing files?" "Yeah, it's the same. Look," he said, pointing. "I think this is how they tag the files they want to remove and keep them separate. But unless you know exactly what you're looking for, you wouldn't know anything's missing." Reese shook his head in frustration. "They're probably keeping these files at an air-gapped site." "What?" Derek asked. "If they don't want anyone to access this information, either internally because there are probably people working for them who think they're totally legit, or externally, like us, hacking into their shit, then they'll want to keep it isolated. An air gap system will do that. This stuff won't be linked to any network, anywhere," Reese explained. "So they tag the files, pull them out, and move them somewhere isolated where they can't be tracked," Sean said. Reese leaned back in his chair, rubbing his hands on top of his head in frustration. "Yes, and that means I can't track them either. Damn it! There has to be a way!" Derek rubbed his eyes. "Get some sleep, Reese. That's an order. You can pick this up again tomorrow." 24 hours later, they stood around Reese's workstation again. This time a wide smile split the young man's face. "Yesterday you mentioned dirty funds, and that got me thinking," he said. "Go on," encouraged Derek. "Funds have to be moved. Payments are made to Trident for weapon sales, and funds are paid out to those entities profiting from the deals, while transaction records and project files can be kept isolated and together in one place. Money moves." "And you're able to track the money," Derek said, slightly in awe of Reese's sharp mind. Reese grinned again. "Yeah, we knew for certain Reyes and Athanas were involved. When I added in the other questionable deals Lieutenant Commander Asher told us about, I had more information. Payments from those sources end up in a different place than the ones we know to be from legitimate business deals, and funds track out of that same source." "Can you tell where?" "These coordinates," he said, as a 3-digit number sequence appeared on his screen. "Let me load a global map of Kathira and see where they are." Reese started tapping, renewed energy in his fingertips as well as in his expression, and then pointed at the screen. "Here we go." "Zoom in closer," Derek ordered. As Reese manipulated the data, detailed satellite imagery appeared on the screen. "Doesn't look like there's much there. A small farmhouse seemed to be the only main structure, with scattered outbuildings surrounding it." "My guess is if something's there, it's underground," Derek said, thinking about the bunkers on Almagest and the rail system on Mira. "Hidden. Protected." "True. And if so, it's perfect for a black site. Remote, only one visible access point in and out. Excellent for security purposes," Sean said. Stepping back from the screen, Derek started for the door.
We need to get down there.
Surveillance gear, weapons, and various pieces of tech belonging to Reese lay strewn around the small cabin. Derek wasn't sure how long they'd have to be there, so he'd sent Sean and Drew out to stock up on food. The suspected Trident Black Site was in a rural location, a few miles from the nearest town. From their remote surveillance thus far, the only structures appeared to be the farmhouse and a few outbuildings. A nature preserve surrounded the area, with rental cabins and campsites scattered throughout the neighboring forest. When the small team had arrived back on Kythera, they'd covered their tracks carefully, using one set of identities to dock their shuttle in the capital city, and entirely different ones to rent the cabin. Reese had already done a good job of setting up the place as a command center. Derek tolerated the young officer's brand of organized messiness, and he knew better than to touch anything. Instead of getting in Reese's way, he busied himself studying detailed maps of the region and locating strategic points where they could obtain real-time surveillance. He'd left Kat in command of Equinox. In the back of Derek's mind, he knew if something went wrong down here, Kat was the person he trusted most to find a way to keep the mission going. He'd left Kaylee behind as well. Although she probably could have survived out here with nothing but her pocket knife, there really wasn't anything for her to do. He missed her, though. The team had gone completely dark and weren't in communication with Equinox at all. He hated being so out of touch. It made him edgy. Drew and Sean provided a welcome distraction when they returned with the supplies. Falling easily into the role of friends on a camping trip, they laughed and joked with one another while sorting and unpacking. Later, while they sat around the table to eat, they talked strategy. Our first order of business is to figure out if there really is a facility here. We'll assume there is, so we'll also need to get eyes on the access road and on the farmhouse itself. See who comes and goes, Derek said. I'll rig up the small drones, Reeves volunteered. They'll look like birds. I'll add some ground-penetrating radar to their package so we'll know if anything's under there. Derek grinned at Reese, appreciating his cheerful attitude and resourcefulness. Good. We'll set up some ground cameras, too. This stew is really good, Commander Asher, Reese said, mouth full. Yeah, it is, Drew agreed. They both turned to look at Sean. Thank you, Sean answered. Brescia, the capital of Kyrs, was a high-end vacation destination before the war. When I was stationed there, my cover was as an apprentice chef in a restaurant. Turns out the whole resort was a front for the insurgency, but I learned a little about using proper spices. Derek let out a short laugh. He'd come to appreciate Sean both for his skills as an operative and for his sharp humor. Over time, Sean had revealed bits and pieces of his history, both personal and professional, and Derek had learned to trust him as much as anyone he'd ever worked with. Okay, Reese, he said, after dinner. I want to get the drones ready to deploy. Drew and I will head out and set up the perimeter camera surveillance. We can monitor everything from back here over the next few days. An hour later, after finishing their meal and cleaning up, Derek and Drew checked their weapons, slid on their night vision gear, and shouldered packs containing surveillance equipment. Sean, make sure Reese is covered while he gets the drones up. Sean nodded. And then keep the shades drawn and the doors locked until we get back. I've got this, Sean assured him, tucking a gun into the back of his pants. Call if you need us, Derek said, tapping his comm. Be careful. Always. With that, he and Drew disappeared into the darkness. Boots crunching on dried leaves, they followed the access road and worked their way toward the farm, keeping far enough away from the edge of the street to duck into the woods and out of sight if needed. In the cool silence of the night, with unfamiliar stars twinkling overhead, the scent of dirt and leaves triggered a powerful memory. He remembered lying under another canopy of stars, with Kaylee. Outside her hidden camp while recovering from his injuries, he'd reached for her hand like it was a lifeline. I think we should set one up here, Drew said, and Derek shook off the memory before he lost himself in it. Agreed. This is the last crossroads before the farm. Anyone coming in has to pass by. I'll cover you. Shrugging off his pack, Drew knelt down to remove one of the small cameras. When he'd finished setting it up, he carefully covered all but the lens with sticks and brush. Derek tapped on his comm. How does it look, Reese? A few seconds later, Reese replied.
Perfect. Okay, we're moving.
They melted further into the forest as they approached the farm, taking even more care to move slowly and deliberately. Derek had no idea what kind of perimeter security might be in place. They planned to fly the surveillance drones overhead, but the stationary cameras would give them the continuous data they needed over time, making this approach on foot worth the risk, or so Derek hoped.
One here, Drew asked.
Yeah, that looks good. Then we'll circle around to the other side.
They repeated the process, Derek standing watch as Drew set up the equipment, and then cautiously moving to the next site. A couple of hours later, they retraced their steps and returned to the cabin. Reese sat at his makeshift workstation, bleary-eyed.
We've got eyes everywhere now. I've also set perimeter alarms around the cabin. No one will surprise us here, he said.
Good. Now go to bed, Derek ordered.
All four stumbled into their bunks. Imagery from the drones confirmed that there was, in fact, an extensive underground facility. As they collected data from the cameras, a pattern emerged. Every fifth day, a vehicle approached the farm. Someone carried a case to the front entrance. After a security protocol, which included a retinal scan and handprint, the door opened and the person entered, only to reemerge less than 20 minutes later, leaving the same way he came.
Looks like a courier, Sean said.
Makes sense that they have to hand-deliver files. It seems like a lot of effort, but if they really want to isolate all their off-book activities, this is the way to do it.
A simple human operation like this leaves no digital footprint to trace, Reese explained.
We need to intercept the next run, Derek said.
Tense silence filled the room. He could feel them thinking, weighing the risks, uneasy.
I know none of you like the idea. I don't either, but this is a way inside, and we have to take it.
They aren't going to hand us the proof we need, Derek said.
Reese spoke first. The courier arrives within the same 2-hour window. We'll have to assume that if he's late, it would trigger some kind of alarm.
That doesn't give us much time to extract intel from him, Sean said.
No, and we need him to physically open the door, Derek said.
I don't need to tell you how much can go wrong, Drew said, exhaling uneasily.
Can you think of another option? We've been here for weeks.
Reluctantly, Drew shook his head. 3 days later, Derek waited by the side of the street, about a quarter mile ahead of the crossroads leading to the farm. He desperately hoped the courier would arrive on the early side. They needed every extra second they could get. Moments later, as if Derek had conjured it, the vehicle appeared. Derek trotted into the middle of the road, frantically waving his hands. The vehicle slowed to a stop.
"Can you give me a hand? We were out hiking, and I think my friend broke his leg," Derek said, approaching the driver's side.
"I have some place to be. Can't you call for emergency help?"
the man answered, eyeing Derek nervously. Derek didn't miss the gun on the passenger seat, within easy reach of the driver.
"Get out," he ordered, pulling his own gun from his waistband and pressing it against the man's temple.
The courier glanced at his weapon.
"Don't even think about it," Derek growled.
Jaw set and looking very pissed, the driver opened the door. Derek grabbed a fistful of his shirt and yanked him out.
"Hands behind your back! Who are you? What do you want?"
Beads of sweat formed on the man's forehead. Derek cuffed him before shoving him into the back of the vehicle and sliding in next to him. Sean materialized from the forest, jumped into the front seat, and shoved the driver's weapon into the back of his pants.
"Start the clock," Derek said.
10 minutes later, they had him secured to a kitchen chair in the cabin. Reese sat in the back corner of the room, pale and jittery. Drew stood behind the prisoner, sidearm pressed to the back of his head. Sean leaned back in another chair, his weapon draped casually but menacingly over his thighs. Derek squatted down so he was eye to eye with their unwilling guest.
"We don't have much time, and I don't have any patience, so please, answer my questions, and you'll get to walk away from here."
The man stared back at Derek, disbelief written on his strained features.
"You work for Trident,"
Derek began, the words a statement, not a question. A hesitant nod of the head.
"Every week you bring something to this facility."
Another nod.
"Files." "I don't know what's in the case. It's locked. I get paid to deliver, not to look."
"The security protocol at the door to the farm. Retinal scan. Handprint. That's it?"
"Yes, the door automatically unlocks when it confirms my identity."
Where do you go when you get inside?
To a lift. It takes me down. I don't know how far.
And then? Derek coaxed.
And then someone meets me at the bottom. I deliver the package. He checks to make sure the lock hasn't been tampered with. I leave. A bonus shows up in my account.
Only one person meets you, every time, Derek asked, insistent.
Yes. Is he armed?
Probably.
Standing, Derek looked between Sean and Drew. Their grim faces told him they still weren't happy with this mission, but grabbing the courier had committed them to the course.
Time, he asked Sean. 30 minutes. Good. Let's go.
They rode back to the farm in silence. Derek kept his nerves in check by reviewing the plan, what little there was of it, step by step. When they pulled up to the field adjacent to the farm, he tapped his comm.
Reese, we're here.
Derek dragged the courier out of the car and hurried him to the entryway. Drew and Sean followed.
Uncuff him, Derek ordered.
After Drew unlocked the restraints, Derek grabbed the man's sweating hand and pressed it against the pad. At the same time, the retinal beam scanned the man's eye. With a click, the door slid open. Drew put a silent hand on Derek's shoulder. Derek gave him a slight, knowing nod.
We'll be waiting, Sean said.
Derek watched Drew and Sean drag the courier back to the vehicle. Then he stepped inside the farmhouse. The door slammed shut behind him.
Chapter 33. Derek's eyes swept through the empty building. Wood floors, no furniture, gabled ceiling. Simple, sturdy construction. He spotted the lift, built into the back right-hand corner of the room. Its gleaming metal door stood in stark contrast with the rest of the rustic interior. He hesitated for a brief moment and then approached. Touching the call button, he took a breath.
I'm heading into the lift, he said into his open comm.
His stomach plunged as the car dropped. Reese's ground-penetrating radar had revealed an extensive underground structure and established that the farmhouse was one of 2 points of entry. The other was located a couple of miles away, somewhere inside a Catheran military base. The fact that Trident likely had someone in the local military on their payroll made the whole team twitchy. Derek could be walking into a data storage facility with a skeleton crew, or a full-scale hidden operation center. He prayed it was the former. When the lift stopped, he already had his gun up and ready. The door slid open. A single person greeted him, just as the courier had promised.
"Hands where I can see them," Derek said, stepping out of the lift.
The man raised his eyebrows and his hands, but otherwise kept his composure.
"Very slowly. Put your weapon on the ground and kick it over to me."
The courier hadn't seen a weapon, but there was no way this guy didn't have one. Dark, curious eyes bored into Derek's. Slowly, the man reached around to his back and pulled out his sidearm. He squatted, placed it on the ground, and kicked it over to Derek. With one hand, Derek fished a set of restraints from his pocket and tossed them over.
"Put these on," he ordered.
The man complied. His cold gaze didn't falter.
"You'll never get out of here," he warned. "We'll see," Derek answered.
He approached the man cautiously, staying just out of his physical reach. Even restrained, Derek knew he was still a threat.
"I need access to the main data files, and obviously I'd like us to avoid detection. Follow me. We'll take the long way round."
Derek followed through quiet, artificially lit corridors. They stopped in front of another metal door, another panel and retinal scanner. The prisoner stepped forward, but Derek pressed the gun against his skull.
"How many people are inside?"
The man looked over his shoulder and gave Derek an appraising look.
"Two analysts." Derek couldn't hesitate. "Do it," he ordered.
As soon as the door slid open, Derek shoved the man inside with such force that he stumbled to the ground. Derek's eyes darted around the room.
Two startled bodies jumped up from their chairs.
With a steady hand, he shot first one, then the other. They crumpled to the ground.
He turned back to his prisoner. "Stay down, until I tell you to move."
From the way the man studied him, Derek could tell he was reassessing, calculating.
"You're a field agent," his prisoner said.
Derek didn't acknowledge him. Gun still up, he shook off his pack and lowered it to the ground. With one hand, he pulled out a tablet and thin cable. He briefly wished Drew were here. He needed a second set of eyes and hands, but he hadn't been willing to risk anyone else.
"Get up. Sit at one of the workstations."
The man did as he was told. With his hands still cuffed in front of him, he grabbed the body that had fallen backward over the chair, tossed it to the ground, and then took a seat.
"What next, boss?" he asked, the whisper of a grin curling his lips. "I'm gonna take off the restraints, and you're gonna copy some files for me." "Sure thing."
Derek unlocked the restraints, still one-handed, and kept the gun trained on his opponent's temple.
"Take the tablet and connect it."
Briefly, Derek thought he'd have to shoot his prisoner as soon as they entered the room, but he was counting on the fact the other man wanted to know what he was after. If the Trident operative made his move too soon, he might lose the opportunity to gather valuable intel in real time, so the man was letting things play out a little longer. It's what Derek would do in his position.
"It's connected. I have access to the mainframe. On the tablet, there's a list. Search by those keywords only, and copy the related files onto the tablet."
Rhys knew there would be volumes of data to sift through, so he'd wisely created a list of names, including members of the Alliance General Council, Security Council, Interplanetary Oversight Division, and upper-level military. If any of those officials had files from Trident's black site associated with them, they were likely suspect. The operative keyed in the list of names, glancing once at Derek with dawning understanding in his eyes.
"The program is cross-referencing and downloading now. I'll let you know when it's finished."
Derek watched data scroll across the screen. By the number of hits, he knew they'd found what they were looking for. As the files downloaded onto Derek's tablet, the operative turned slightly in his chair, hands folded in his lap.
"Are you Alliance Intelligence?" "I was too for a while. You'd probably have more fun working for us. You'd make more money, too. And I like your style," he said, looking back and forth between the two bodies. "Shut up."
"Sure." He swiveled back to face the screens. Seconds ticked by. Derek stayed frozen in place until the screen stopped blinking.
"There you go. All the files we have on the big, bad government officials. Disconnect the tablet and then back away from the workstation."
Before Derek could react, the operative's fingers connected with the keyboard. Just a few strokes, but it was enough. In the distance, an alarm began to blare.
"Fuck!"
He could hear the grin in the other man's voice before he turned around.
"I told you you'd never get out of here."
A second security door slid into place over the first.
"Rhys!"
Derek knew his voice sounded more desperate than he intended.
"I've got everything," Rhys said into his ear.
Derek breathed a small sigh of relief and turned back to the operative.
"Even if I don't get out of here, the files already have."
The operative's face shifted from surprise to anger in a matter of seconds. Derek's brief moment of satisfaction transformed just as quickly when the other man sprang from his chair, knocked a gun from Derek's grasp, and tackled him to the ground. Flat on his back and struggling to pull air into his lungs, he missed his chance to deflect the first punch. It came fast, connecting solidly with his jaw. The metallic taste of blood filled his mouth. When his opponent drew back for another swing, Derek rolled hard to the right, throwing the other man off. He kicked upward and felt his boot meet with a kneecap. Scrambling to his hands and knees, Derek lunged for his gun, only to be tackled again. This time the operative rolled Derek over and put both hands around his neck. Derek's first instinct was to grab at the hands, pry the fingers loose. Black spots dappled his vision. The grip around his neck wouldn't budge. He had no leverage to punch or kick. Forcing his mind to calm, he reached up and dug his thumbs into the other man's eyes. It took longer than Derek expected for the hands to loosen. When they did, he pushed away hard and crawled toward his gun. Nauseous and dizzy, he blinked to clear his vision. Grabbing his gun, he stumbled to his feet and turned toward his opponent. His first shot went slightly wide, hitting the operative's shoulder. Derek moved closer, steadier with each step. The next shot blew a hole straight through the man's chest.
"Derek!"
Frantic voices echoed in his head.
"What the hell is happening in there?"
He backed up into the wall and let himself slide to the ground. As the adrenaline fled from his body, he began to shake.
"He triggered an alarm. I'm trapped in the server room." "We'll figure a way to get you out of there,"
Drew said, the pitch of his voice an octave higher than usual. No, you won't.
We're not leaving you, Drew insisted. Yes, you are. That's an order. There is no way you can get me out of here, but you can get those files to Minister Bonaire.
Don't make me do this, Drew pleaded.
Finish the mission, Drew.
The silence on the other end of the comm stretched for several heartbeats.
Don't fucking die, Derek. We'll find you. Whatever it takes, Drew promised.
Picking the tiny communication device from his temple, Derek crushed it in his fingers. Then placing his gun on the ground in front of him, he leaned his head back onto the cold metal door and waited.
Kaylee, Chapter 34. Commander Rowe, I've got an incoming message from Lieutenant Chase.
Kaylee's eyes flew up to meet Kat's.
They're rendezvous coordinates, the helmsman said.
Set our course to meet them, ordered Kat.
Kat wore her command easily, with both resolve and finesse. Kaylee had seen her friend in action as an undercover operative and as a pilot, but never as the person in charge. It fit her, and Kaylee told her so often.
You have the bridge, Benin.
She gestured to Kaylee, and the two hurried out. As planned, the team hadn't made contact during their entire mission. They didn't want to do anything, however innocuous, to give away either Equinox's presence or their own. It had made for a nerve-wracking couple of weeks. The tedium of living on a ship, one that was essentially in a persistent holding pattern, wore on the whole crew. Kaylee functioned as the ship's doctor and treated minor illnesses and injuries, but that took up very little of her time. She tried to fill the remaining hours documenting more of Alma Guest's recent history, including the final battle against Marcus and her tenure as co-leader. As she trotted alongside Kat, her heart thudded in her chest. When they reached the landing bay, the deck officer informed them that the shuttle was on approach. Kaylee stretched out her mind. Panic filled her out of nowhere.
Kat, something's wrong.
Kat's brows knitted with worry. They stood in silence, waiting. Drew emerged from the shuttle first and looked agonizingly between Kat and Kaylee. Kaylee wrapped her arms around herself, shaking, and took an involuntary step backward.
We got what we needed, Drew said, his voice barely audible.
Sean and Reese appeared behind him. The shuttle door slid shut behind them.
Where's Derek? Kat asked.
Drew closed his eyes and shook his head.
Kat paled.
Kaylee's vision dimmed and the darkness closed in on her. She felt her legs give out, but before she crumpled to the ground, Drew had her in his arms.
I'm so sorry, Kaylee. I didn't want to leave him. He could still be alive. I promised him we'd find him.
She tried to breathe, tried to follow Drew's rambling words.
Derek could be alive. There was a chance he was still alive.
She held on to that small hope, allowed it to pull her back from the abyss.
We need to debrief, Kat said, voice strained.
Drew kept his hand on Kaylee's arm as they left the bay. When they sat together a few moments later, he leaned back in his chair and took a shaking breath, then recounted the mission with careful detail. When he told Kat that Derek had ordered him to leave, he looked at her, pained.
Would you have done it? Would you have left him there?
Was there any chance you could have gotten him out? Kat asked.
None.
It was Sean who answered.
Once the alarm triggered, the place went into full lockdown, and the only other egress was through a military base.
Then yes, I would have left him.
Derek knows the only way we can help him now is by getting this intel to the right people, and that's what we're gonna do. Kat closed her eyes and rubbed them with her knuckles. Tapping her comm, she sat, staring at it.
Commander?
The helmsman's confused voice echoed through the silent room.
Kat cleared her throat. Take us out of here, Benin. Set course for Corleone.
Kaylee let out a small whimper, and Kat gripped her hand. Equinox hovered just outside the Corleone system, stealth shielding activated. Kat wanted to make contact with Captain Donovan before taking any next steps.
Sir, she began, after Donovan's image appeared.
Her eyes were rimmed with bluish circles, and Kaylee noticed the small tremor in her lower lip when she spoke, but she had on a fresh uniform and stood straight and tall, before her commanding officer. "We've obtained proof that Arendal has no biological or chemical contamination, and further, that Trident Industries has an unauthorized weapons manufacturing facility based out of Arendal. We obtained names associated with a hidden money trail, and we can link several members of the General Council, Security Council, and a few high-ranking military officers, including the newly appointed minister, Vasily Athanas, back to Trident."
"Damn it," Donovan hissed. "But now that we know who's complicit, we can inform Minister Bonaire and circumvent the dirty officials."
Kat shook her head, opened her mouth to speak, and then clamped it shut again.
"What is it, Kat?"
Donovan asked, waiting in silence.
"It's Derek, sir." She hesitated again.
"Tell me," Donovan demanded.
"Derek copied the files and uploaded them to Reese, but an alarm triggered in the bunker and he was trapped inside. They have him."
Kaylee caught the glimmer of pain on Donovan's face before he composed his features and spoke again.
"That changes things," he said. "I know, sir."
Kaylee looked at Kat, confused. Kat gave her a pained look.
"Everything we know, they'll know."
"What?
Tarek wouldn't give anything up," Kaylee whispered.
"Not willingly." As a dawning realization swept over Kaylee, bile rose in the back of her throat. She gripped the edge of her workstation until her knuckles turned white.
"Our plan was to bring this information to Minister Bonaire, but we can't go to her now. They'll be waiting. Horizon is in danger, too. They'll know you were working with us."
Donovan visibly blanched.
"Athanas just placed Minister Bonaire under protective custody, announcing there have been threats to her life. They must already know something."
Kaylee's gut churned. She felt the horror and frustration of everyone in the room. No one spoke. A moment of sudden clarity struck Kaylee, and she looked at Kat.
"I know where we can go."
Alone in her quarters, Kaylee sat on the edge of her bed, numb. She recognized this detached feeling. It was the same protective response she'd had when she couldn't process the death of her loved ones, the devastation of her home, or the abuse she'd suffered under Marcus's regime. It was as if she'd cut herself off from her emotions and floated outside her body, listening, observing, even speaking, but with no real connection to anything around her. Admiral Reyes had Derek. Kaylee had heard rumors of enhanced interrogation techniques, of a place where the worst of the worst criminals and terrorists were sent. Was Derek there? What unspeakable things were they doing to him? What would happen when Reyes got what he needed? Would she even know if he were alive or dead? The questions circled in her mind, driving her into a frenzy of panic and despair, until she simply shut down. She lost track of time, staring at the ceiling in the dark, unable to sleep but not truly awake either. Minutes passed. Maybe hours. A light knock on her door. Kat didn't wait for a response before entering. She touched a sensor panel, and soft lighting cast a warm glow around the room. Kat's eyes were bloodshot, and tendrils of dark hair escaped the tight braid at the nape of her neck.
"Can I get you anything? Something to eat?"
Kaylee shook her head. "I'm not hungry." Looking unsure, Kat reached to put a hand on Kaylee's arm, but pulled back.
"How was he when I went missing?" Kaylee asked. "As wrecked as I've ever seen him," Kat admitted. "I keep thinking about what they're doing to him," Kaylee said, voice flat. "Leaving him was the hardest decision I've ever had to make. I'm so sorry, Kaylee."
Shuddering, Kat hung her head.
Kaylee blinked at her. "I don't blame you, any of you. If there was a chance Drew could have saved Derek, he would have tried. If you thought there was a chance, you would have too. I know that."
Kat put her head into her hands, her shoulders shaking with silent tears. After a few moments, she wiped her cheeks with her sleeves.
"Whatever it takes, we'll find him," she promised.
Kaylee believed they would try, as soon as it was humanly possible. But the look on Kat's face and the tremor in her voice told her they might already be too late.
Kat's comm chirped.
"What is it?"
she snapped into it.
"Ma'am, we're an hour out," the helmsman reported.
"Thank you, Benin,"
Kat answered. Now she did take Kaylee's hand.
"I'll meet you in the launch bay in an hour."
"I'll be there," Kaylee promised.
Chapter 35.
"Commander Rowe, Dr. Chris, this way, please."
They followed the young lieutenant through a brightly lit, busy administrative office. They'd come alone. Kaylee's hands shook and her stomach clenched as the door opened and they stepped into Admiral Markham's office. Although Derek had his mother's deep blue eyes and thick, dark hair, he had his father's features, from the shape of his face to the line of his jaw. Kaylee drew in a sharp breath. The genuine warmth in the Admiral's eyes when he saw her was instantly tempered with dread. He knew something was wrong. She couldn't keep the agonized expression from her face.
"Kaylee," he said softly, holding his arms open. She stepped into his embrace, burying her face in his chest. When she pulled away, he squeezed his eyes closed for a moment and exhaled deeply, steeling himself for whatever she had to tell him.
"Commander Rowe, Kaylee, come. Sit down," he offered. They sat.
Kat cleared her throat.
"Sir," she began, and then hesitated. The two held each other's gaze. "Have I lost my son, Kat?" he asked, his voice ragged.
She took a shuddering breath.
"In all likelihood, yes."
Kaylee closed her eyes. Swaying lightly to her own internal rhythm of pain, she gripped the side of the chair. She held on to keep herself tethered to her own body, to keep from drowning in the darkness.
The Admiral sat stiffly. His grief, sharp and searing, melded with Kaylee's own.
Next to her, Kat struggled to keep her composure. When Admiral Markham spoke, his voice was gentle.
"Tell me what's happening."
They shared everything, from the Dracaran's revelation about Arendal, to their part in the Battle of Mira, to their off-grid mission to discover the truth.
"Derek uploaded files, containing the names of everyone in the government who has ties to Trident's illicit deals. I have that here," Kat finished, reaching into her bag for the tiny chip Rhys had created for her. She handed it to Derek's father.
Admiral Markham stared at the piece of hardware now resting in his hands. Kaylee heard his thoughts as clearly as if he'd spoken them aloud.
"His son might have sacrificed his life for this." "Whose names are on here?" he asked.
7 people, including Reyes and Ethanas. 2 are members of the General Council, and 3 are on the Security Council. Together they wield a lot of power and influence. We're a small group. The evidence on there speaks for itself, but we have to make sure it gets into the right hands. We thought you could help us." Kat finished.
He nodded his head, then cleared his throat.
"First, will you tell me what happened to Derek?"
Kat looked down at her hands and nodded. "I know his style. He went into that op knowing he might not come out. He made sure everything he accessed from inside the Trident site would immediately upload to Rhys on the outside. He knew he was entering an expansive underground bunker with only limited intel on what was down there, and he wouldn't let anyone else go in with him. He managed to extract the data, and then the Trident operative he'd captured triggered an alarm. The whole place went into lockdown. There was no way for Lieutenant Chase and Lieutenant Commander Asher to get him out. He ordered them to leave and finish the mission." Kat paused and squeezed her eyes shut. In a hoarse whisper, she said,
"We knew he was alive when we left him. He might still be, but..."
Her voice trailed off.
"Kat," Markham said. She looked up. "Sacrificing yourselves wouldn't have accomplished anything. Finishing this mission will. This is about more than Derek, more than any one of us. He knew it. I know it, and you know it too."
He paused and inhaled deeply.
"If my son is still alive, we will move heaven and earth to find him. But the only way we can do that is to finish this," he said, holding up the tiny chip.
Kat briskly swiped a tear from her cheek.
"Yes, sir."
The following morning, Sean, Drew, and Captain Donovan joined the group. Both Horizon and Equinox were now safely orbiting inside the Arathos Defense Network Array, a shield as powerful as the one surrounding the Corleone system. "I've deactivated Horizon's tracking system," Donovan informed them. "No one knows where we are, but that fact will trigger alarms in Alliance Command. We have to work quickly. The more time we give Reyes and Athanas to consolidate power, the more difficult it will be for us to move against them," Admiral Markham said. "Sir, I believe Reyes is going to kill Minister Bonaire," Sean said. All eyes turned to him. Clearing his throat, he continued, "Forgive my interruption, but Captain Donovan, you said he'd already taken her into protective custody, and he's already established a narrative that her life is in danger. She knows he's corrupt. She's a loose end." "I think there's a high probability you're right. He's kept her on Corleone under the guise of keeping her safe, but it's probably so he can keep her close," Markham said. "She is the legitimate leader of the Interplanetary Alliance and the civilian commander of the Inter-Allied Forces. As Alliance soldiers, we're sworn to protect her," Donovan said. "We have to get her to safety," agreed Markham. "But if we tip our hand before we do, Reyes and Athanas will likely eliminate her immediately." "We were on our way to her, but we knew Reyes would be expecting us," Kat said. Markham furrowed his brow in thought. "They were expecting Equinox, or possibly Horizon. They won't be expecting a routine diplomatic shuttle from Arathos." "I see where Derek gets his tactical mind," Donovan said. Markham gave him a tight smile. "While a team is extracting the minister, we can monitor the whereabouts of everyone on this list. We'll begin classified conversations with uncompromised Security Council members. They're well briefed on the location of most Alliance assets. And as a member of the Planetary Oversight Chamber, I'll notify the local leadership on member worlds. They can prepare their own forces if necessary." Kat looked wary. This could erupt into a disaster. "Minister Bonaire safely by our side would go a long way to averting that disaster," Markham said. "I agree. When it gets out that Bonaire was removed unjustly, member worlds will rally around her," Donovan said. "Timing is going to be important." As he began to pace back and forth, Markham planned. "Based on this evidence, Donovan and I will petition the tribunal for emergency arrest warrants. We need to secure the minister, and as soon as we have her, we need to take down Reyes, Athanas, and everyone on this list. We can't give them any time to start another war." Donovan looked between Kat, Sean, Drew, and Kaylee. "Ideas! If we send a covert team on an Arathos shuttle to extract the minister, Equinox could follow with stealth mode engaged," Kat suggested. "The team can rendezvous with us once they've acquired the minister. We can keep her safe once she's on Equinox." "Commander, I don't want you out there with only a minimal crew. That's a valuable battleship, and she'll need to be at full capacity just in case. I'd like to loan you a fighter squadron at minimum," Admiral Markham said. "Yes, sir, I'd appreciate that." "We'll be poised to act as soon as you have the minister," Donovan said. "What if we can't get to her, or she's dead before we get there?" Kat asked. "We'll act anyway, but there will be a vacuum of power, and people get excitable when that happens. There are a lot of moving parts. The faster we can reinstate normalcy, the less likely this will blow up into conflict," Markham said. "Let's do this," Kat said. Chapter 36. Kaylee knew it was hard for Kat to sit out the covert part of the mission, but she needed to remain in command of Equinox in case conflict erupted. The small team of herself, Sean, and Drew stayed on Arathos to plan. Kaylee hadn't needed to convince anyone she should be there. Her unique skills had come in handy many times before. Admiral Markham handpicked the pilot, the co-pilot, and the two additional operatives that would join them, and had cover identities created for the tactical team. They'd worked out a rudimentary strategy earlier, but were anxious to leave. A deadly clock ticked in the back of all their heads. Fine-tuning the mission details would have to happen on the way. Admiral Markham ushered them to a small, long-range shuttle and wished everyone good luck. The team boarded the shuttle, but Kaylee lingered a moment. "You know where he is, don't you?" she asked. "I have a good idea," Markham answered. "I can't stand the thought When her voice broke, she put her hand over her mouth, stifling the sob that escaped.
"He's strong. I know he'll fight